Welcome to the Science of Fitness podcast, where we aim to inspire you to live a healthier and more fulfilling life as we share evidence and anecdotes on all things relating to health, fitness, performance, business, and wellness. All right. Greetings, everybody, and welcome back to the Science of Fitness podcast. He's back again, the sharpest, wittiest mind. Rory, pleasure to have you back.
All right, geezer.
A little bit shorter and sweeter today. We don't need to go sort of a little bit long and into too much detail, but I think something I wanted to bring to light was a bit of the rationale behind our programming. We're going into testing week this week, and so we've got sort of now 4 days to go of some rigorous testing of both strength and metabolic measures, as well as some performance-based stuff using the sports tech, the Vald tech. And then we generate our report card for our members and give them an insight into all the work that they've been doing over the last 3 months, how much of an effect it has had on their strength and conditioning and everything in between.
We assess, not guess.
Assess, not guess. There you go. And so off the back of that, we then launch the start of the next phase of our programming.
Yes.
And so the idea behind today's episode is to really get a bit of a deep dive into the rationale of how we structure that program. And I suppose for the, you know, the listener out there that maybe hasn't had access to, you know, decent exercise science, why we do what we do in the way that we do it is probably the most important thing that I want to share with everybody. So over to you. I think when we look at the end of this testing week, we go into week one of a next phase. How long does that first phase go for? What's it called? What's it all about?
Yeah. We test a few times a year. We kind of work in a macro cycle of 12 weeks. So we split it up into 3-4 week blocks. And again, that's, you don't have to do it like that, but it just works out quite nicely for us. So essentially 3-4 week blocks. The general theme, and I'll go into detail as to different techniques and what we can do within each block, but the general theme is you're probably starting with, you know, higher volume, lower intensity. So we're trying to refine these skills, so spend a bit more time on them and practice the technique. Obviously, we're probably trying to aim for a bit of hypertrophy, build a bit of muscle. So you're thinking, you know, large ranges of motion, hitting all the muscle fibers, that type of thing.
Yep.
Which does come with a bit of soreness, as to be expected, as long as we're not, you know, overdoing it. Higher volume, lower intensity. You probably might even throw in, you know, there's a bit of movement variability. We're not necessarily going straight into the big lifts initially. We sort of build into that. And then as we go along that 12-week whole cycle, we end up obviously the inverse. We kind of end up in that sort of higher intensity. We dial that up a bit and then drop the reps and that type of thing. So kind of works in that way. It doesn't, you know, it's not specifically a linear periodization. It doesn't just go from low to high straight away, but it does kind of follow that theme because we want to be peaking, obviously, in your testing week. Like that's the week we want to be lifting heavy. So we need exposure to heavy. We need a decent stimulus in those few weeks leading up to it. So that's kind of how it runs. It's, as I said, it's a 12-week macro, but we break it up into 3-4 week blocks, and it works quite well for us.
Yep. Okay. So 12-week macro cycle for a person that's never heard of macro cycle, what is that?
I mean, it's just your whole, like, your entire, it's just how you organize your training. Like, it's how you plan your training. A macro cycle is just that, a whole period, and you can kind of work back from it. Like, you sort of reverse engineer and think about what's our end point, where do we want to get to, and you kind of work back from there. So it's kind of a fancy way of saying your big overall plan, and then you break that up into like the meso and micro cycle, which could be weekly and then daily, and what you're going to do each day. But macro is the big picture, the big outlook, essentially.
So it's sort of industry-specific language to a certain degree.
It's a bit of jargon,
isn't it?
It is a bit.
And it's really funny when you lean in, you go and study, and as we've done into our industry, or you maybe speak to lawyers, or you speak to accountants, or you speak to people that are specific. You go to speak to doctors, and everyone's got their own abbreviations and their own language, and you sort of feel a little bit left out. And I think that's something that, you know, the average person, again, oh, we've got a macro cycle of this, and then, you know, our meso cycle is going to be this, and then our micro is like, hang on, what are you even talking about? Yeah. Training phase, periodization, linear, undulating. A lot of it's jargon, as you said. A lot of it's just sort of this language, and once people can understand what we mean by it, it then gives them a bit more, okay, there's a bit more security. It's not that complicated. Yeah. It's just sort of different terminology.
It sounds it, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Macro cycle is a plan.
A long-term plan.
It's a way of saying plan.
And then a mesocycle is?
Is a smaller plan within the plan.
And then a micro cycle
is even smaller, Kieran.
Yeah. Too good. And really, not a lot of people have had access to this sort of planning, if you will.
Mm.
And it's been around in the sport and the elite and high performance worlds for a very long time.
Yeah.
And gradually it's working its way into, you know, the average person's sort of training. But if you haven't ever trained in accordance with a mesocycle, let alone a macrocycle, you know, you're probably missing out on some things. And so, you know, for the average person out there that's, you know, maybe turning up to a group fitness training session and just going, and there's not too much variability in their reps and their sets, they're probably missing out on some of the benefits. And what are the sort of typical things we see? You know, you've mentioned we've got 3-4 week blocks.
Yeah.
Number one, you've said high volume.
Yeah.
What's number two? What's number three? Why do we do it? Why do we change it?
Yeah. So we start off with, and again, to use a bit of jargon, I guess it's more of like an accumulation phase. So we're trying to build our work capacity, our ability to tolerate a decent amount of volume, which is going to pay dividends in terms of you get more exposure reps to the skill, and you obviously get a little bit of hypertrophy benefit in terms of like there'll be a bit of metabolic stress and and that type of thing. So that's the accumulation type phase. And then you obviously build into the intensification, word of the day.
Oh, there you go.
Which is obviously your high threshold motor unit, aka you're just using everything because it's heavy. And we've kind of dialed in, like we've had a chance to practice these movements and we're really trying to push some heavy weight and create like a good neural stimulus and obviously prior to testing. So
reps and sets and that sort of thing within that phase?
Yeah. So, well, it's with the accumulation stuff again, and here's some more quotes for you. I don't just write these down and practice them before we do a podcast, but there's many ways to skin a cat in terms of programming. There's not just one perfect program. Like if there was one perfect program, then everyone would be doing the same thing, but we're all different. And, you know, a lot of different programs can work. You just got to be able to justify why you're doing them.
Yeah.
In this accumulation phase, you can try different things out. You know, you can, like what we often do is add what's called a constraint. So we make it harder without necessarily having to go heavier. So we could throw in stuff like tempo work, which is like, you know, your slow negatives and that has a number of benefits. You can add in things like drop sets that can sort of prolong the set or things like that that help in terms of, you know, it's making the exercise harder, but we're not trying to deadlift 200 kilos just yet. You know, like we've had a pretty big heavy block and then testing, like maybe we need to dial back the intensity because we're probably at a point where there's a bit of fatigue and maybe the joints are feeling a bit. So that is said, we dial back the intensity in that regard in terms of load on the bar, but we still make it harder because we can add in volume, tempo, ways to prolong the set and that type of thing. So
and so that goes in the, sorry, you're saying
accumulation usually, phase. Yeah.
We then move to the intensification, if you will.
Oh, I will.
What are the little things in and amongst there that we're playing around with?
Well, again, there's different ways you can do things, but you could play around with things like cluster sets or wave loading or certain techniques that allow you to get more juice from the squeeze. It's not something that you do all year round because it is quite hard and tiring, but, you know, again, ways we can kind of get a little bit more out of it. You know, there's undulating rep schemes. There's things like that where, again, there's no one perfect way to do a program, but, you know, the beauty of this group fitness program that we've been doing for years and years and years now is you kind of play around with what kind of works and what doesn't and what people like and what people don't, and you get a pretty good idea of that. So I feel like I've got a pretty good idea of that now, and we throw some of these little techniques in. You don't always have to, you know, it can be simple as well, like simple is good. But, you know, there are times when you can just add in little different techniques or little different rep and set schemes that you know are going to get, you know, a bit of bang for your buck and a bit out of it. So, there's ways you can play around with it. But, again, the other, you know, the flip side of that coin is don't just do this shit for the sake of it. Like, just, yeah. Oh, I've got to change it. Oh, I did this last time, so I can't do it again. Like, yep. Oftentimes we'll repeat things because they work, you know.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, we're sort of sitting within each one of these phases for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And we're constrained by limitations on time.
Yeah.
We want to keep rolling. We want to test every 12 weeks. We want to actually give people a bit of feedback. And it's also generalized, you know, we're also doing something for 100 plus people.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't quite dial in for a little bit longer on a certain area that might suit someone specifically.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's sort of managing the limitations, if you will, of group fitness.
Yeah.
Is you've got to be aware of it, but it's not to say just throw it out, do random stuff, don't plan it, don't have a cycle, don't have something. It's just leaning in on specific areas, as you said. So after intensification, then what's sort of next after that?
Well, I mean, it's kind of just more intensification, really. Like before testing, we need to be lifting heavy. So we just get to that point where it's pretty low volume. Like it's almost a deload. Like that last week in particular, we dropped the volume. But I think people sometimes mistake a deload for, like, they go, oh, it's a deload. I better not lift heavy at all. Like, you know, I'm just going to completely back off. But the reality is a deload. It's better to just drop in volume and keep the intensity high because we still want that stimulus.
Okay. Yeah.
A lot of people will just, deload week, like, you know, I might only rock up twice and barely lift anything. Like that's detraining. That's not deload. You know what I mean? So a deload, you know, a perfect deload would be dropping the volume, but, you know, maybe it's like a third or something, but you're still going for it. The idea is you're going to feel a little better because you don't have that overall tonnage, so the volume is lower. But yeah, don't mistake a deload for like you just back off and do shit all, you know. Sometimes people they'll taper too long or they'll just back off. So that last bit of that intensification, we build and then we drop the volume, but we stay high in the load, and then you should be feeling pretty good going into testing.
And so what would the major differences be between, let's say, you know, we've got an accumulation intensity phase one, intensity phase two? What are some of the clear differences that someone would expect within at least our program?
Yeah, I mean, with the accumulation phase, as I said, we don't have to hammer the big barbell lifts. We could, you know, we could try different variations. So there's probably a bit more movement variability, things that might create a bit more range of motion. Let's say we go from a regular deadlift to a snatch grip or you know, snatch grip RDL or something that's going to probably, you know, you've got to get a little bit closer to the ground. So there's a high demand for mobility and whatnot, but it's, you know, it's probably a good one because it's a weight limiter in a way. You're not necessarily going to be able to lift a crazy amount in a snatch grip deadlift, but it's going to be pretty bloody hard. And going from that then into your conventional deadlifts after, you're going to feel $1 million. So, you know, things like that, it's a good chance to work on some good unilateral stuff like Bulgarian split squats. You've got high range of motion and there's that stability constraint as well. So, you know, things like that, that are, as I said, they're difficult exercises, but they're not necessarily crazy heavy. So your joints might feel a little better after, and, you know, the overall neural load is a little bit less, but that, you know, it's, we're still challenging ourselves quite a lot. So accumulation is a good time to probably add in a bit of movement variability. Then as we get into our intensification phases, you obviously want to bring the big lifts back in because that's what we test, and they're obviously massive bang for your buck exercises. So that, generally speaking, those last 8 weeks, each day we'll have, like, it won't change so much. Like Monday, we're doing back squat, you know, Tuesday chin up, Wednesday bench press, Friday deadlift, Thursday front squat. Like that'll probably be pretty constant for 8 weeks. The first 4 weeks, we can play around with different things, different squat variations, different push variations. So that's probably, the main difference in terms of that exercise selection. Yeah.
Cool. And then as we get closer through those last 8 weeks, what changes in terms of, if the exercises are staying the same, what would one expect to change through those 8 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, just volume will be lower, but the intensity is just dialed. And as I said, you know, maybe that last block you got something like clusters in, which is can be a pretty advanced method. I know in generalized group fitness programs, not everyone really needs clusters.
Yeah, what is a cluster?
Great question. So let's say, for example, instead of doing a set of four at 4 reps at 85 kilos, which is maybe close to your max, we do a set of 2 at maybe 87 or 90, and we have a little like 10-second break, like a micro break, and do another 2. So you do still do a set of 4 technically, like it's 4 reps, just heavier. which sounds like a no-brainer, but obviously it's not something you can just do all year round because it's hard and it's taxing and on a number of different areas. But, you know, it's just that little way of getting a bit more juice from the squeeze, and I feel like it's a bit underused personally. A lot of the members really like it. I really like it. So it's just a way of maybe breaking through the plateaus or just getting that little extra volume in terms of you're getting the same amount of reps at a higher load. Like it's, you know, it's a good way to really progress that strength, and that could be quite an advanced technique, but it's something you could do right near the end because you're really built up to that level, and you know, you might end up doing 2-1 or 1-1 and, like, you know,
within a cluster. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. So,
and I mean, I sort of reflect on my own experience with it. It's, I've done it and, you know, been lucky enough to be lifting weights for, you know, since I was 14. I got taught to do it quite well, and then plateaued for a very long time, brought in a cluster like sort of the program, and it, yeah, punched me through a ceiling.
Yeah,
just purely because you're getting a little bit more volume at that same higher intensity.
Yeah.
And it goes a long way. So, you know, it's not for someone that's starting out early. And I think anyone that is going through the early parts of our programming, we don't really push them too hard, as you said.
And that's where you got to be smart as a trainer. Obviously, if you've got a class of like 20 or whatever, not everyone has to do the cluster sets. You can have options. Obviously, you know, if it's their first session, I'm not going to say you got to do your 1-1 where, like, you know, one rep in the tank, if that, like, they might, we might start them off at 4x6 and just be smart about it. But that's where your, I guess, experience as a trainer comes in. You got to figure out what's appropriate for some people. You know, if someone can't even squat their body weight, then it's like, do they need a cluster or should we just start to build some reps and work on the skill and get stronger?
So yeah. With that, how do you manage that? Let's say we're, you know, 4 or 5 weeks into that sort of second, or, you know, the intensification part of what we're doing in our programming. Someone turns up for the first time, they haven't strength trained in 12 months.
Yeah.
We're getting, you know, 4 weeks out from testing. How do you manage that person, and is it different?
Yeah, it is different. It's a case by case basis, I think. And, you know, there's two sides to it. A, you don't want them to feel left out and like they're doing something in ostracized, like you're over in that group.
Yeah.
You're in the ghetto over there. So you need to still make them feel a part of it, but you also, you know, need to be doing things that are appropriate. Like, do they need to be doing these 2 RMs or 1 RMs, you know, at this phase because they're new to strength training? Obviously not. So you kind of got to find a middle ground, and it depends on where you're at with the program, what exercise you're doing. But, you know, it could be just as simple as you're doing 3x8 lighter today, or you're doing 4x4 or 4x6, and we're building into that, and you can make a bit of a plan for them. Next week we're going to drop a rep. Like, you know, it's not rocket science, but it does require a bit of thinking on the fly, and you obviously need to know what you're doing and know what's appropriate. And I guess that just comes down to experience, knowing what's appropriate for this person and this person. So,
and there's probably a lot of people out there that have walked into some sort of training program in some way, shape or form, be it strength, be it conditioning, be it a high intensity mix and whatever modality, and experienced just getting thrust in the deep end and probably had a negative experience with that. So
yeah,
I think there's a lot to say.
Adaptability is, you know, key.
Yeah.
As you said before, you nailed it. Like it's a general program. So it's generalized. It's never going to cater entirely 100% for everyone. We got pretty advanced lifters in this gym and we got some beginners and people coming in new. So it's a general program and you got to do your best to cater for everyone, but then there are times where you're going to have to adapt on the fly, and that's just that's, you know, something I feel like I'm pretty comfortable with now, but because I've just been doing it for so long. But you just need to have that. You need to have that adaptability.
Mm. And I think it's you know, it's something for a lot of trainers out there to probably consider a little bit more. A lot of people have negative experiences in our industry because they get thrust into the deep end doing stuff that they're not quite capable or haven't built a system that can tolerate it and end up hurting themselves or end up just, you know, not achieving anything and feeling sick or, you know, whatever it might be, being sore for 7, 8, 10 days after training. It's like, how can we dial that back and how can we manage 100%. That? So, yeah, it's very interesting.
What part of it?
So if you were to sort of provide a high level framework for someone that maybe isn't doing group fitness, is enjoying their training, is probably plateaued a little bit, given the framework that we lean on in our group fitness strength program, particularly strength and conditioning, if someone is on their own and they're sort of trying to consider, oh, actually, how do I structure something for a little while and stick to a long-term plan?
Yeah.
As you said, a macro cycle. How would you sort of break that down for someone?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're on your own, you know, and maybe you're not used to the periodized model or the plan model, it's, you know, you'd probably start pretty simple. And simple can be just changing one little variable at a time. And I know on our last podcast, we spoke a bit about progressive overload, and there's a number of ways you can do that. And, you know, if your goal is to end up lifting more weight, then it's just little variables that need changing as the weeks go on. So, you know, you might start at 4 sets of 6, but then after 2 weeks, you might just drop a rep to 5 and you go, oh, I might be able to push that little bit heavier this week. And it's just little things like that that you can manipulate. So it doesn't have to be, you know, super complicated. Sometimes you could just, after 6 weeks, you've dropped 2 reps and you've just gone a little heavier. Okay. Or you're doing the same set and rep scheme for 4 weeks, but your goal by week 4 is to be doing heavier than you were in the first. Yeah. So it's like you do need to add stress somehow. So you need to change a variable, but that could, you know, that could be weight. That could be adding more volume. It's like, okay, I'm going to do the same weight for 4x6 this week, but by the end of the 4 weeks, I want to be doing it for 4x8 or 4x7, or, you know, like you just, there's a way you need to make it harder, but it can be adding weight. It can be adding volume. I mean, probably not necessarily decreasing rest. That might be more a metabolic one, but there's different ways you can make things harder.
Mm.
But you don't need to, as we said, change everything at once.
Yep.
And it doesn't need to be complicated. So, you know, let's say 4 week block, all right, you lift this weight for 10 reps. You do that for a couple of weeks. You try and lift it for 11 on the third week.
Yep.
Or you drop a couple of reps and go even heavier. So something like that is, it's simple, but it's still not done that well, I find, in the industry. And, yeah, it's just – keep it less complicated to start with, but then obviously as you get more advanced, you can start to utilize some of those other techniques like wave loading and clusters and things. But my advice to someone out there who's just kind of starting with it is keep it simple.
Yep.
You know, either lift the same weight for more reps and sets, or drop the sets and reps and lift more weight.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Simple.
And what's quite funny is you haven't even talked about exercise selection in that, because that shouldn't be changing too much, right?
Yeah, not really.
There's no need if you want to, you know, you want to get a little bit stronger.
No, I said like those last 8 weeks in that block, we will do the same big lifts for 8 weeks. Yeah. Like the supplementary lifts might change a little bit. I'll still make sure we've got certain things like your vertical push, horizontal push, pull, hinge, all that sort of thing. But like the big lifts, we'll be doing them for at least 8 weeks, sometimes 12. Like sometimes we'll have deadlifts right from the start. You don't have to not do that. But you do need to be able to, you do need to practice that skill. You want to get better at squatting, you need to be squatting of some form. And, you know, the big squats for us, usually all year round, there'll be back squat, front squat at some point, and then you'll add in little variations, Bulgarian, Zurch or whatever. But we're going to have back squat and front squat in at some point almost all year round.
So, and it goes to what we're testing, you know, it matches.
Well, yes, specific to what we test, 100%.
And that then, you know, we've chosen those major lifts, and the evidence has suggested if you're good and you're strong at these things, you're going to build a robust, you know, strong body that can handle all the other variabilities of life. And so it all sort of goes really good.
There's not much point. Yeah. If you are going to test something as your main assessing tool, then if you're not doing that, then, you know, what's the point? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing. And hopefully, you know, just by running through that there, it's not that complicated. It's less is more, leaning in and being specific, and then most importantly, adhering and sticking to it, doing what you have planned out to do, and not, you know, chasing something different just because it's a bit boring.
And that's arguably, I would say, it's more important than a good program. Like, a good program is important because you'll get better results, but the reality is a mediocre program done very, very well, like with consistency and effort, will still get you results.
Yeah.
Obviously, that same thing with a good program is even better. But like, you know, effort and consistency have to be the number one priority. Even if your program is not amazing, like, you'll still surely get better. But, you know, if you can cap that off with a good program as well, then you're laughing. There's no way you can't get better.
Yeah.
Life permitting.
Life, yeah. Yeah. Too good, Rory. Keeping it simple, taking the complicated, making it easy. I love it. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, mate. Anytime.
And I'm sure we'll have you back again to talk more details in other areas, simplify more complicated things.
Absolutely. That's what I do, brother.
Beauty. Thanks, Raw.
Take it easy.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. For more regular insights into SOF, be sure to check us out on Instagram or Facebook, or visit our website at scienceoffitness.com.au. Once again, we thank you for tuning in to the Science of Fitness podcast.